Welcome back to Stand-Up Comedy Secrets for Beginners. I'm Ron Temple, and I'm here again with leading stand-up comedy expert Steve Roy. Okay, Steve, today we will attempt to stay on topic, and today's topic is our audience. So what does a new comedian need to know about comedy audiences?
Well, that's a good question. There's actually quite a bit to know about audiences, considering that they are the one variable that comedians have the least amount of control over, if they have any control at all. So in order to understand comedy audiences, the very basics involves what you need to know about how laughter works. And laughter works in different ways, and it works in similar ways depending upon the situation. But here's what you need to know about laughter. Laughter is a shared response. It's a response of appreciation that someone got what you said, and the angle that you said it at, or the perspective or whatever you said, tickled them. It touched their funny bone. But the big thing to know about laughter is that it's a shared response. You share it with someone. You share it with a group of people.
When you say share, I'm assuming that is that comedy, is that the comedian and the audience sharing, or is that the me sharing with my neighbor next to me?
What? Well, when I say share, I mean if you're in a conversation with a person and they laugh, they're providing you that's a response that they're sharing with you to say that they not only got what you said, but what you said tickled them.
Okay, so the fact that every once in a while I'm sitting watching a sitcom or something and I'm all by myself and I start laughing kind of uncontrollably, I'm not really sharing it, but I'm sure having fun with it.
Well, you know, that's a little different situation in that that's something that touched you so deeply that it didn't require that you share that with anyone else. Now, you will admit that that happens pretty rarely. I mean, I don't know about for you, but it's pretty darn rare that I read something online that causes me to just burst out laughing.
So, I mean, laugh out loud, LOL.
Yeah, I'm talking about the real laugh out loud. the belly laugh, you know, really touches you deeply and you respond deeply. Well, when you're online and you're reading something or you're by yourself watching TV or whatnot, you'll find that that happens much, much, much less often if you're by yourself than if there were other people in the room. Would you agree with that?
Oh, that's true. But I do know my children thought I was a little bent once in a while because at middle of the night I'm giggling over some stupid show.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm just giving you some dynamics for laughter in the live scenario. What I'm telling you involves the live person or the live audience or live group scenario. Am I making sense?
That was perfect. Yeah, and I actually understand it. I'm giggling thinking about it.
Okay. Well, and here's the other thing, too, is laughter has a contagious nature to it. And that contagious nature has to do with proximity. And when I say proximity, here's what I mean. Have you ever been standing in a group of people and somebody got so tickled that they can't stop laughing? And because they couldn't stop laughing and they're laughing so hard, you started laughing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I just saw that on YouTube, a YouTube video somebody sent me where somebody on a subway in New York was doing something on their phone, started laughing. And it pretty soon, a lot of people kind of moved away from her while she's laughing, but then a whole lot of people started laughing with her. And it became kind of you could see the contagiousness, and nobody knew what anybody was laughing about. They just couldn't stop laughing.
Well, you just brought up a key point. You mentioned subway and a subway, and people are in close proximity. They're packed in, usually, on a subway. And so it's just hard to ignore when somebody's laughing, and when I'm talking about laughing, I'm not talking about a chuckle. I'm not talking about mildly amused. I'm talking about these people are genuinely laughing out loud. And there is a contagiousness to that that is affected by proximity. And here's what I mean by proximity. If you're standing with a group of people and somebody starts laughing and they're laughing so hard, they can't stop it. They can't seem to control it. And it causes the other people to laugh around them. But what if that person was across the street and they were laughing uncontrollably? Would they have the same response?
No, that's when you move away.
with your group. Well, no, you'd look over there and go, look, that idiot's doing something. I don't know what it is. It appears that they're entertained, but it, do you understand what I'm saying? So this proximity thing has an impact.
Yeah, no, I do get that because I have been affected or been the effect of contagious laughter. Yes.
Okay. So let's just take this situation and talk about this in a group. Now, it doesn't matter if you're in the classroom. It doesn't matter if you're on the comedy stage. You're performing for an audience. Now, you don't call them an audience as a teacher, but it's still an audience. And the big deal is the closer those people are together, the bigger the collective impact if they start laughing, and especially if they start laughing collectively. I know you've experienced this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And in the classroom and in, of course, comedy audiences.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's this group dynamic that happens. Well, that's where a comedian's power really comes to fruition, is being able to make a group of people, a collective group of people, laugh. And so one of the big things that impacts a stand-up comedy show, a live stand-up comedy show. Now, the reason I differentiate that is because there's a difference between a live stand-up comedy show and an individual watching a recording of stand-up comedy. The two are like night and day. And folks will understand why by the time they get through with this. But one of the most important audience factors that there is in stand-up comedy is seating. Now, if you go into a comedy club, you will notice that the tables are tiny and the seats are pretty darn close together and the tables are pretty close together. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. It's Sardine City.
Oh, it's they want you packed in there as closely as possible. This is one of the big secrets to stand-up comedy. The closer people are seated together, the bigger the impact you're going to have with your material. Now, when I say this for getting laughs and being funny. The closer people are seated together and that kind of thing doesn't help you if you're sucking.
I
don't know. I don't know if I'd say it's contagious. I mean, it's pretty much universal, though. I mean, if somebody's blowing chunks, everybody seems to know. It's kind of like that old joke that George Carlin used to say, you know, two guys walk into an elevator, one guy farts, everybody knows who did it.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to tell you is this. Of all the audience factors that I could begin to talk about, audience seating is probably on the top of the list. Now, I say that because a lot of people, a lot of new comedians especially, think that audience size is really what matters, you know, and I'll be the first to tell you, the bigger the audience, the bigger the laugh, the bigger the laughs that you can get. Does you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect
sense. If you're funny, but if the seating is not proper, if it's not optimal for getting laughs, you can have a big audience and get smaller laughs than you can with a smaller audience.
You know, I didn't realize that, but one of the things that I noticed when we went into the improv years ago was they seated us, right? They brought us in ticket by ticket and seated us, but they, you know, you just wanted to kind of get by yourself when you got in. Here's my group. I want to sit here. And they went, no, no, no. And they would sit us until all the seats were filled. No spaces in between. And I didn't realize that's what they were doing.
The pro comedy places will do this because they know if they don't fill up the room and if they don't control the crowd, and show them where to sit, where they need to sit, people will do just like they do in the classroom. Where do people sit in the classroom? If they come into an empty classroom, where do they go?
Back.
How about that? And guess what? That's not just in the classroom. That's in the comedy club, too. If you don't have any control over where people are sitting, they're going to sit all over the place. They're going to sit far away from people and those kinds of things. That's just human nature. You've got to overcome that. Because if the room is not full, you still want the people sitting closest to the stage in a group. That's going to give you your biggest impact.
Well, that, you know, I didn't realize that's what I was doing. I always thought it was because I had a bigger ego than I should have. But in a classroom, I always had a seating chart, and I wouldn't allow the distance. I wouldn't, you know, if I had a smaller class, I pulled them as close to me as I could. And I often got accused as a professor, you know, we're adults now. There's, you know, this is childish that you'd have a seating chart. And I'd go, but I'm in control. So,
yeah, I am the master.
But I didn't realize that's what I was doing. I just took it as the need, because I felt they learned better with that same kind of concept in close proximity. So I didn't allow a lot of spacing, even with my students. And that usually only happened when I didn't have a full class.
Yeah, and if you didn't have a full class, you wanted them all closer to the front. And whether you were consciously aware of it or not, that's where you were going to have the biggest impact with the smallest group of people.
And it does work.
Now, let me tell you how just absolutely critical this is. I met a professional comedian in 2002. His name is Ken Groves. He's a comedy ventriloquist. And he's done TV, he's corporate gigs, cruise ships, been doing it for years. Made very good money annually doing this. Well, when he would do a gig, now the cruise ships you don't really have to worry about. They really have their stuff dialed in. But in corporate type gigs, there can be some issues. And I'll tell you, he had a contract that he would use. Now you're talking about a guy that would get anywhere from $3 to $10K a show or more. So this is the deal. But with his contract, he provided them 4 seating arrangements, 4 different seating arrangements in order to have the best possible show. That's how he presented it. And let me tell you what, his contract was such that if they didn't comply to one of these 4 seating arrangements, he could walk with the money. Didn't have to perform nothing.
So as long as that venue could handle his seating arrangement, which worked for him, and then I assume that's why he had 4, because different venues needed a different style.
It depends. Different places have different room setups and that kind of thing. So he gave him 4 different setups that would give him the best chance of getting the big laughs. And if they couldn't do it, I mean, he told me of times where he went in and said, look, this room is not going to work for what I do. And they went, well, that's tough. You're going to have to do it. And he's like, no, what I'm going to do is walk. And I'm going to keep the money, because he always got paid in advance.
Right.
And that's what my contract says. Contact me. Have your attorney contact me. I'm telling you, man, he had him by the short hairs on this deal. But he knew in advance, because he had done gigs early in his career where people wanted to set him up across from a swimming pool.
Right.
You know, he's like on one side of a swimming pool and all the audience is on the other side, or across from a dance floor. That's another big one, where they won't put any tables and chairs on a dance floor. So you're basically got this abyss in between you and the audience. And dude, it just makes such a difference. I can't even tell you. And if I had any gripe with any comedy venue, it would be the ones that wouldn't seat the audience. They wouldn't escort them. They wouldn't guide them so that they were grouped together. They just let them sit willy-nilly wherever. And you know what happens already.
Right, back of the room.
Yeah, they're sitting all over the place, away from here. It's no different than in the movie theater. They just sit wherever. Well, the thing about it is that impacts your show tremendously. And let me tell you, I'll tell you how important this is. Given the choice between performing for 40 people that are seated properly next to the stage, or performing for 100 people that are spread out over a 300-seat room, dude, I'd take the 40 people every day.
Well, you bring it up at a really good point. A new comedian, someone new to the business, they're not paying attention to that. They haven't made that mistake. They haven't learned from that. Here's one of those examples: is learn the easy way by other people's mistakes. You're bringing up a really good point. This new comedian may actually have really funny material, but doesn't get the audience response he needs and wonders what he needs to fix. So proximity or the way the audience is laid out may help him decide that his material's funny.
Well, it can have an impact. You know, I'm one of these people I don't focus on what we're talking about. This is for informational purposes. And the reason I don't focus on this stuff is for one reason, is because once you give the information that I'm providing in this show, new comedians will latch onto that and go, oh, it was the audience. They weren't seated properly. There wasn't a big enough audience. Blah, blah, blah. And it becomes everything but their act
Yeah, we talked about that because tendency as human beings is blame somebody else, blame something else. Yeah.
Yeah, and the problem with that in stand-up comedy is that you can't blame anything. I mean, you just can't. Now, I will tell you there are certain instances where, yes, you could point to audience factors. For example, if you do an open mic show and the only people in the room are the comedians in the back, well, guess what? They're not going to laugh, and you don't really have an audience, so you have to use that stage time. Hopefully, folks will still use that stage time and make the best of it. But when a new comedian starts out, understand, just like I thought when I first started, man, I was going to go up on stage and be performing for throngs of people. And the reality is you're a newbie. You're a non-tested entity. It's assumed in stand-up comedy that you suck before you ever step on stage.
I got to go back. You said throngs of people. Is that like a metric measurement?
What well, I mean? You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about hordes, the masses, you know. People are just going to be lined up and be turned away at the door because you're doing your open mic thing. And the reality is by the time you get a chance at your open mic time, all the other sucky comedians have run the audience off. I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
So this is kind of where you want to be the opening act and not the headliner.
I'm talking about open mic shows, you know.
That's what I mean, though. I mean, remember when the setup was that, you know, a normal show, you've got somebody that opens, you know, the MC, and then you got the headliner.
No, actually, you nailed it. You nailed it. The last thing you want to be is the headliner of an open mic show.
You want to be up front. You want to be that opener this time.
Well, they front load those things. You know, they put the better people, the people that have more time, the more proven people, the openers, features, and headliners. They get the better spots at the beginning, and then it's the newbie nubs that get the leftovers, and then whatever few leftovers are left, those are run off because the people are so terrible. They're just so terrible at stand-up comedy. They're not prepared. They think they've got it dialed in. They go up, wah, wah, you know. It's just terrible.
The audience, you know, we had talked about audience size. Is there an impact of audience size, really?
Oh, audience size, if you're dialed in, audience size can make a massive difference in your stand-up comedy because there's a number of reasons for this. A larger audience is going to laugh longer. There's a larger group dynamic. So if you've got, let's just assume that the seating is the same. You know, it's absolutely the ideal seating for a group of 30 people or a group of 200 people. And your comedy kills. Let me just tell you, you're going to get laughs for the 30 people, but the length of laughter that you're going to get from the 100 people is going to be massive in comparison.
So, and I know all shows, you know, comedy shows are timed somewhat. You've got a certain amount of time that you got to get on, get off.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If they tell you you're doing 15 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, that's what you do.
Yeah, and with that said, doesn't laughter then that actually becomes an interference in getting your show out, right?
Well, that's actually a very good question, and the reason I say that is because I can tell you when I would do my set list for a 200 seat show, I knew what I had to do 45 minutes for that show. Now, the first time I got to perform at 4th and B, is 4th and B still there in San Diego?
4th and B still here. It's concert hall, I think.
Yeah. It's 1500 seats. Okay. So here's the thing. The first time I did 4th and B, it was 1500 seats. I got to help promote the show. It was completely sold out. I did my set list for my usual, I did it for an hour because I needed to do an hour. And I'll tell you what, I got up there and what would normally be the 40 minute mark in my routine, and my time was done. I needed to wrap it up.
So the laughter, it kind of pushed off an entire set.
It was like what I had planned to do was a third more than I needed. And that's because of the group. I mean, they have great seating. They were probably seated. The place was packed. You know, I'm up there nailing it. Boom, boom, boom. I'll tell you, man, I could feel the audience laughing. The air pressure differential in the room, I could feel it on my chest. Oh, man, there was nothing like it. I couldn't sleep for 3 days. First time I did that.
Yeah, that's another point that when you called it on a roll. When you get on a roll, when you really feel the audience, when you feel the energy or synergy, actually, the audience gives you, it's unbelievable. I think that's the addicting part of humor or entertainment is that I don't even know how to say this, but I take a night class, or I'd teach a night class, and I'd have trouble sleeping that night, basically because I was still on. I was still just up.
Because you had really, such a great class and that kind of thing. Just remember, you know, like I was saying before, laughter is the ultimate expression of appreciation. And that goes both ways, not just from the person who's appreciating it by doing the laughing, but the person who delivered and is now the subject of that appreciation without being, you know, psychological or whatever.
Oh, I understand what you're saying there. So where are we at?
But, so audience size does matter, but I'm going to tell you a secret, a huge, huge, huge secret that a lot of new comedians don't get. And that secret is this. If you can kill smaller audiences, when I say smaller audiences, I'm talking about 10 to 15 people, obviously seated properly. If you can do that, man, the bigger audiences are just a piece of cake. What you have to actually do is take a breath and pause longer for the audience laughter in bigger audiences than you do with littler audiences. Now, a lot of comedians think, I have to talk faster with a smaller audience. It's not that they're talking faster. It's just the audience laughter doesn't last as long.
It won't. It's not as contagious because you have less people.
Well, it's not as massive, you know. Audience laughter is relative to audience size, given the proper seating. A smaller audience will produce a certain amount of laughter, and then a bigger audience will produce a larger amount of laughter. And these are things that actually affect the comedian's timing, because...
Go ahead. No, what I was going to say is a pause. You mentioned a pause in there, too, that your pauses would be longer because you're waiting for the laughter to kind of subside. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because here's another little secret. You'll find that a lot of new comedians run over laughs. Well, there's a basic thing. If you're talking, the audience isn't laughing. So if you cut that audience off before they're finished laughing, they'll stop laughing because they can't laugh and hear you at the same time.
So that's really kind of a talent too, because I do realize even in lecture that pause are powerful. The pause is powerful. For many reasons, not just to finish, you know, let somebody get over the humor, the laughter, so they can hear me again, but the pause could even be a very serious, you know, just stop and make everybody think. But you're right, when you pause, I mean, it better be deliberate in some respects, right?
Well, yes, exactly, and that has to do with structuring your material properly, which I keep talking about over and over again. The thing about it is you've got to be aware enough, and we were talking about this before, where I can't teach someone experience. This is where a comedian has to learn through experience how to conduct their act and do the pausing with a smaller audience versus a larger audience.
Yeah, but the smaller audience is great practice.
Oh.
Really, really good to develop your material.
A smaller audience, if you can kill a smaller audience that's seated properly, you're on fire. It's one of the big indicators that any comedian can use to know where they're at in the business. Now, it's not a sole source indicator, but it's a huge indicator.
Well, you see that with, big headliners. These headliners that go to these smaller comedy clubs, and they're trying out new material, of course, but it's usually a smaller audience, and they usually gather, you know, when they do a big concert hall kind of thing, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean... Again, what's going to work with a smaller audience is just going to work bigger. It's not going to necessarily work better. It's just going to work bigger with a bigger audience, provided it's generating the laughs.
All right. So the laughter in a small audience is appropriate for a small audience, but when you're with a larger audience, that same laugh may give you, 30, 40 more seconds, right?
Oh my goodness, yeah, it's massive. When I recorded my CD, which I recorded a CD in 1995, I'd only been doing this for 3 years. I recorded a CD. It was basically for me. I didn't really sell it after show or anything like that. I just wanted to see if I could do it, and I did. That was in a 450 seat venue, and it was packed to the gills. And dude, I mean, it's just amazing when you get that many people in one place seated properly. Now, I will tell you another problem that open mic comedians have is they'll come in and when they finally get their turn, they'll see that there's, 2, 3, 4, 8 people in the audience, and it affects the performance that they ultimately end up giving. Meaning to say, they look out there and go, well, there's hardly any audience here. Why should I spend any effort? Blah, blah, blah. You kind of get where I'm coming from.
Oh, yeah.
And let me just tell you what, that is the absolute wrong approach to stand-up comedy. You should do everything that you can do to kill those smaller audiences. Because here's the other thing, too. Comedy professionals, when I'm talking about comedy professionals, I'm talking about comedy club managers, agents, talent bookers, promoters. They can tell when somebody is on fire with a small audience. And you never know who's going to be in a room when you're there. And if you're killing a small audience, man, you're going to draw attention, because most of these other comedians, they don't stand a chance.
So it's a big indicator all the way around.
Oh, it's a huge indicator. But what they'll do is they'll look and go, well, there's hardly any audience. And then even worse, they'll go up and belittle the audience that is there. Now, we kind of talked about this outside the show, but you tick off an audience, and, man, you're getting nothing. I don't care if there's 8 people. I don't care if there's 800 people. You tick them off, you're toast.
Yeah, angry people don't laugh, do they?
not as a general rule.
They glare. They stare. They make faces, but they're not laughing usually.
No. So...
is that a kind of a fairly common mistake young comics make? Because I've seen it. You know, I've seen it where you just went, really? Really, you talking to me? You know, and you almost feel that connection when they insult the audience or insult the intelligence of the audience even.
Well, that's kind of I'm sad to say that that's kind of a common thing for comedians to do that. And it's not just new comedians that do that, to really berate the audience because they didn't get the show that they wanted. They didn't, the throngs of people aren't there to see their magnificence, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just telling you that kind of stuff doesn't get anybody anywhere in any capacity that I can think of.
Well, I started this show today saying we're going to try to stay on topic, and we've done pretty well so far, but I think we're sneaking off there a little bit. Do we want to get back on, or we want to continue down that path a little
bit? Oh, you know, it doesn't matter to me, man. I mean, okay. We're talking about audiences. I think that we've stayed on topic pretty good.
Yeah, we have today. and if you don't know this out there, this is difficult for us. We have way too much fun doing the show, and we have a tendency to sneak off of our topic. You may not know it, but we actually are trying to stay on topic, and a lot of times we don't, but we have fun doing it. All right, but I'll get us back on here a little bit. There's all kinds of other problems in a club and an audience and stuff, and I know one of them because I personally have experienced it a few times, is the alcohol consumption, because two drink minimums, you know, and two drink, you know, for me, I'm already there, you know, I'm cheap drunk, okay?
Well, you know, there's kind of some theories about this. The reality is that when you have an audience that's consuming refreshing adult beverages, if they do that to excess, it can be problematic. There are comedians out there that will tell you, you know, I didn't have a good set because the audience wasn't drinking enough. And I think that's some of the silliest kind of stuff that that a comedian can say about an audience. You know, you should really be able to perform your act while the audience is stone cold sober and get the response that you need. Alcohol shouldn't play a part in whether you're funny or perceived as funny or not.
Let's take it to that level, because the last time I went to an actual concert, comedy concert, where you have, you know, 1,000 people in the room, there's no alcohol consumed. You cannot have alcohol in those. And I laughed as hard as I've ever laughed. Yeah.
Well, again, funny's funny. It doesn't matter. You know, alcohol is kind of a extra thing. If anything, alcohol can be the root of more problems than any good thing. If an audience consumes too much, it can cause issues with heckling. And we've talked about this, and I'll do a whole show or part of a show on heckling. But it's amazing how brave some people will get when they've had thrown down a few.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, they'll do all kinds of things. They'll run out on the freeway naked. And I mean, there's just any number of things. So, you know, comedians shouldn't be, amazed.
Let's not bring up my past.
Well, so you get what I'm saying. I mean, and so there are certain instances. Comedy clubs are pretty good about not having people who are extremely wasted stick around. You know, they're pretty much under the same auspices as any other bar, where if you see someone who's visibly falling down, if you let them go, you're subject to problems. You know, if you let them drive home. Remedy.
I've seen it on the bus stops, legal remedies. Yeah, that's what happens.
But you know, so they're pretty good. And I found that by and large, with the exception of the second show Friday and the second show Saturday at a comedy club, comedy audiences are pretty good about the alcohol consumption, you know, and again, your best offense as a comedian is to have them laughing, because if they're laughing, then, you know, they don't have time to heckle. They won't deal with heckling or that kind of thing. And like I said, I'll talk about that later. But you can go into some of these venues that are set up in bars. And, man, if they're set up in bars, I'm not talking about a comedy club. You get where I'm talking about? I'm talking about a bar.
Bar, yeah, TVs and...
Oh, yeah, there might be TVs, video games, pool tables going, darts, people up walking around, that kind of stuff. And these people go there to pound them. And then they go, oh, by the way, there's a comedy show. Wah, wah. Well, you know, that's another thing about corporate gigs that's just outstanding, is you just don't usually see people that are toasted at a corporate event, because the boss is there, the boss's boss is there, the vice president is there. You know, nobody wants to be seen, you know, crawling around on their lips at one of these things.
And when they do, it usually doesn't work out well.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like Monday morning. It's like, hey, Bob, come on in. You need to come in here for just a minute. We just need to have a chat about that event. Here's a box.
Clear out your desk. Yeah. And, you know, but you're right. You're going back to the corporate side of life. And classroom, you know, we don't allow drinking in the classroom. In fact, we discourage it. but in corporate gigs, same thing. I mean, you're really dealing with a sober audience there to learn, to get something out of it. So,
well, I've never been to a corporate event that didn't have a bar set up in the back.
No, it's not that they can't drink, but you're right, they don't. You've got basically a sober audience.
Well, yeah, they do. Yeah, you're right, they do, but they're much more reserved.
Yeah.
If they're going to pound them, they're going to leave that place.
And the difference in the classroom is we just let them, we do the same. We do a real quick talk and let them go away. So we keep sober living, you know, right up front in the classroom, which it works out really well. But they do laugh still.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, the alcohol thing, people who are dependent upon whether the alcohol, whether the audience is toasted or not, that to me is a sure sign of a non-professional. They're a hit and miss comedian. They don't really know what they're doing. They can't duplicate what they do over and over again and those kinds of things. That's my professional opinion. I mean, I had very few problems in any environment. The times that I had problems had to do with other issues, and I'll talk about those other issues, particularly with bar gigs. And we kind of talked about this, about all the distractions in a bar gig. Now, I'll tell you, one of the best bar gigs I ever did was a place called Centerfield in Huntington Beach. And it was a sports bar. They had pool tables, video games, they had a full-blown bar, they had a little stage in the corner, but they had a dedicated comedy night, I think it was twice a month on a Wednesday, and they promoted it in advance and that kind of thing. Well, let me tell you what they did. Dude, they turned off all the TVs. They took and covered all the pool tables and then brought chairs, you know, higher-setting chairs, so they made the pool tables into tables.
Oh, wow.
And the place was packed. The arcade, the video game thing, was far removed from the rest of the place, so it really didn't come into play. They had great lighting, little bitty tiny stage. I mean, this thing was maybe, I don't know, not even 8 foot by 8 foot. I mean, it was tiny little stage, maybe 6 foot by 6 foot. But they had good lighting. It was right in the corner. There wasn't a bad seat in the house. It was usually packed, and man, the audiences were ready to roll. I mean, I could not describe a better place. Now, on the flip side of that, I did a biker bar in Ventura, okay? And I went up there, dude, and they had this little stage. You walked in right through the front door, and within 10 feet of that front door was the stage of the front door. Okay, and there was a little stage. It was like a... Oh, I want to say 3 foot by 5 foot. I mean, a little tiny thing. Okay, right next to that was a dartboard. Okay, and then right on the other side of the dartboard was the pool table area. And then to the other side of the stage was the beginning of the bar where there were people seated at the bar. And they had video games on the other thing. Oh, my God, I went in there, man. And I went, you know, I took a look at this, and I was the headliner. There were other comedians that went on before me, so I got to see what happened. Okay. And so I kind of knew what to expect, so I just went up and had a good time. And the people in the front row, I mean, there was probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 people in the front around the thing that really enjoyed the show. They were super audience. And then there was that guy playing darts my whole show right next to me. The TVs, they didn't turn them down. They didn't turn them off or nothing. So I had to, you know, go, hey, did you hear that? Well, hold on. There's something going on here. It was just horrid.
The darts. So that's kind
of I mean, and people didn't miss a lick. They didn't care. And because of the nature of the facility I was in, you had to watch what you said because maybe one of those darts might be coming for you. So it was just a pretty wild thing. Needless to say, it wasn't set up well. I mean, people were talking. You could hear the balls cracking in the pool room that was right next to this thump next to the dartboard and then they're talking about something on TV. I can't remember. What it was, E! True Hollywood Story or something. I mean, dude, it was just terrible. So, I mean, you have to be able to look at those kinds of things and go, okay, this isn't the best venue that I could be in.
Did you do it more than once?
No, I did not do it more than once.
Yeah, and that's back to what we started this whole series with is, you know, do what works and quit doing what doesn't work. And that's one of those things you just go, wait, you know, this could be detrimental to my health.
Well, if it hadn't have been so far away and I could have checked it out in advance, I would have said, no, I'm not doing this. But it was up in Ventura. I didn't know.
So you showed up and went.
I showed up and went, oh, wah, wah.
Well, you kept your teeth, though, right?
But I did good, man. I got along with those biker people, and they appreciated my show, the ones that were looking.
Well, but going back to the Centerfield in Huntington Beach, they understood that comedy night. They promoted it. They set it up right. But that was good for them.
Oh, absolutely. It was a big boon for them, especially on a Wednesday night. It was always on a Wednesday night, which is a low night of the week. And the other thing, too, is that show was put together and managed by a guy that I know named Bruce Baum, who is people would know him if they saw him. He's a very experienced comedian, done all kinds of stuff, been on all kinds of shows. But he knew how to put together a room, and he demanded certain things be a certain way. And because of that, they had a long-running comedy show there.
And it works, then, because people do enjoy comedy. There's no doubt that, you know, we've seen it ebb and flow through the years where there's just high areas for stand up and then low areas. But it never stopped us, the audience, the people wanting comedy. Because comedy is still a great release. Laughter is always a, you know, what is it? Laughter is the best medicine. But we feel it. And I think quite often that on those low periods of stand up clubs and comedy disappearing, it's difficult. It's a, you know, we miss something. And I don't know if we're in a high or low right now. I just know that stand up has just always been, it's been out there when we need it. We go out of our way for it. YouTube videos all over the place. Now in today's technology, I can sit in the airport while waiting for a plane and watch my favorite comedy show. And I do, you know, one of the few things I really do on YouTube, the two major things I do is music videos, you know, a little bit of music that a song I like. And then I switch over to some comics, and there's some funny, funny folks out there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But I'll also tell you that the type of audience you're talking about, you watching online videos, is a completely different audience than the live audience. And this gets into another area, but remember I had said before that online videos are not a comedian's best friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This goes back to this situation where I talked about this in the very beginning, about laughter being a shared response. When an individual watches an online video, whether it's on Facebook or YouTube or wherever, Vimeo, wherever they're watching it from, that's a one-on-one. There's no one there. As a general rule, it's one-on-one unless there's a group of people around. But I'm talking about if you're looking at your phone and you're watching a video, it's one-on-one. That's what I call individual viewership. And that viewership is far, far different than group dynamic viewership that you get in the live audience environment. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's the big thing. Since laughter is a shared response, when you're watching an online video, there's no one to share that response with. And here's the thing. We are perceptive enough that audience laughter on a video doesn't carry over to the individual. It doesn't have any impact whatsoever on that individual. So
that canned, let me say that. Some of that is canned, what we call canned audience laughter.
No, that's not true.
No, a lot of it's real. Okay.
No, it's real audience laughter, but here's the thing. It doesn't carry over to the individual.
So I'm not laughing because they're laughing. I'm laughing because I find it funny. Or if I, but I don't laugh. You're right. I don't do laugh out loud funny. I don't, you know, most of the time. Yeah, because it looks really bad in the airport when you're just falling down laughing. You know.
So they're left with one thing. They're left with whether or not the person viewing appreciates, likes, understands the what they're talking about. It becomes extremely subjective. There is no group dynamic involved. I used to say for years, you know, as a comedian, all you got to do really is make half the people laugh, because if you make that first half laugh, the other half will laugh with them.
You know, and that's true. In fact, if I'm distracted, you know, I realize that someone will start to laugh or make a movement, you know, the distraction will cause me to refocus, and then I'll go, oh, what did they say? You know, I've caught myself doing that. Well, what was funny about that? I missed that. Because now I want to be involved. So part of that contagion is the audience, me.
But that's what I'm saying. There is no audience contagion.
Yeah, you see none of that.
No, not at all. Not at all. It doesn't carry over. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal. I just happen to have a article on my blog. And just in case people want to know where that's at, it's at realfirststeps.com. And you can find all kinds of information, including information about what we're talking about or what we've been talking about in this series. But one of the articles I have is why stand-up comedy clips don't go viral. Have you ever noticed? It's extremely rare for a stand-up comedy clip to go quote-unquote viral.
Yeah, I haven't noticed. Like I said, I have to search usually for comics that I know are out there and I'd like to see. But no, yeah, except for Facebook, when we say that, stand-ups, we rarely see them.
Well, right, and part of the reason is because what'll happen when a comedian puts a video online, even if they're slaying that audience, man, they're getting 20, 30 seconds of laughter a minute. There's going to be a portion of the people that look at that and go, okay, whatever. And there's going to be a portion of people that go, oh, man, that's hilarious. And they'll share it with other people, and other people go, well, yeah, okay, whatever. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, and I've done that myself, where I find somebody that I really think's funny, and I want to share it. Now I'm back to that point where you were just saying that I'm looking for the shared audience. I'm looking for someone to share this humor with me. So I say, hey, you got to see this, and I send it to them, and they go.
Yeah, but see, they're looking at it from an individual viewership basis, and if they don't relate to that material, what that comedian's talking about, if they can't relate to it, if they can't appreciate it, if they don't like the comedian, I mean, a comedian is stripped of their true power, and that's that group dynamics and the power of getting a group of people to laugh. That's just wiped away. So
now, is that some kind of recommendation though for new comics not to stay away from that?
No. What I'm saying is no. I mean, for new comedians, they should be video recording every single show for evaluation purposes. But you know, somebody will have a good set, they'll put it up, you know, expecting to get this massive praise. Oh my God, I fell out of my chair. Dude, I had a diarrhea attack while I was watching your stuff. Blah, blah, blah. I had to go change my underwear, and it doesn't happen. And they can't figure out what the deal is. And what I would tell new comedians is you've got to get your fix in the live environment. And as far as putting stuff online goes, you know, I don't have very much in the way of videos online as far as my stand-up goes. And it'll always be that way. You know, I have just enough. I mean, even if you're dealing with – if you've got an electronic press kit and you have a couple of videos there, I would only put a couple of videos there a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes max. I mean, total for a couple of videos, and then – if someone wants a longer video, like an agent or a promoter or a talent booker or somebody like that, then they need to be able to request that from you because they'll be able to see the difference.
With that said, that press or that media package that you put together, is there some more information on that?
Well, that stuff is in my...
That's what I mean. That's the stuff that you actually, you talk about that pretty... You have a system for that also, right?
I just show people how to set up. I show comedians how to set up a free EPK, electronic press kit. It's very simple to do. There's not much to it. But I show them how they can do that for free to start until they get going. But here's the bottom line. You don't really need anything like that until you're killing. You can have a flash website that has a hand that reaches out and rubs you while you're watching the website. But if you're not funny, it doesn't matter.
And still all goes
well,
to fun.
When I talk about funny, you know, you talk about, I'm talking about what agents and bookers and talent people, they might not particularly care for your content, what you're talking about, but they are trained, they've trained themselves to look at the audience laughter, to also consider the audience laughter, which the casual observer, like what you're talking about, where I go and look up these videos and that kind of stuff, doesn't care about that. They're just looking for stuff that's personally funny to them. And when you take away that group dynamic, dude, it just changes everything. This is one of the reasons why you don't see a whole lot of stand-up comedy on TV. You really don't. There's some select stuff on Showtime. There's some select stuff on HBO. You've got Access that has Gotham Comedy Club. And you've got a little bit of stuff on Comedy Central, but very little is devoted to stand-up. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, no. In fact, I quit watching Comedy Network years ago because it wasn't fun.
Well, see, did he?
Every once in a while they'd feature a comic or somebody that I thought was funny, and I'd if I could watch it. And they showed it over and over, you know. But it was the one, you're right, it was one guy or one gal that did their show. They'd record it or show it multiple times on the cable network channel.
Right. But by and large, there's very little of that. As a matter of fact, I talked with a guy who had a contact that worked for Comedy Central. And at the time, and this has been, a decade ago, told me that Comedy Central does stand up. They do some stand up, but it always runs in the red. It never runs in the black for advertising.
And that's pretty typical.
Well, I'm just going to tell you that. And here we go. It boils down to this thing where stand-up comedy is best appreciated live, in the live environment, where you do have the impact, this audience impact, this group dynamic, the group laughter factor, whatever you want to call it, that creates the magic, that stand-up comedy is, that magic does not come over individual viewership of stand-up comedy videos. I don't, you know, that's just the way it is.
You know, I, like I said, I do realize that I enjoy it, but the, I think what we really brought out here is, you know, the audience or the contagious nature of comedy or the fact that we as human beings just like to laugh. I mean, it's always a nice thing to do. We can do all of that in interpersonal, personal, one-on-one, small groups, audiences, everything. We can do that and that's fun. But when we get to videos, it really becomes what I'm thinking or believing or feeling at the time also, right?
Very much so. It becomes very subjective and one of the big aspects of stand-up comedy just gets pulled away. That's the big thing. And so new comedians need to know that. New comedians need to know that they need to use video for self-evaluation. They need to know how to self-evaluate. They need to give their best performance for every single audience that they do, whether there's 8 people in the audience or whether there's 1,000 people in the audience. It doesn't matter.
And I think that's life. I think you just brought life back into this because that's everything we do in life. If we're doing it the best we can, whatever that is at the time, then we're going to do really, really well.
Absolutely.
We've run out of time, but there's much more to come. So don't miss the next episode when we reveal more stand-up comedy secrets for beginners.